Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Joining me again this week is my lovely wife, Sarah Eastridge. Sarah, say hello to the listening public.
Hello, listening public.
And I guarantee you they're all saying hello right now, no matter where they may be. I'm hoping that it's in a cubicle and that your fellow coworkers are giving you an evil stare right now. But I don't know about you, Sarah, but I am insanely excited for War for the Planet of the Apes. I'm not going to lie. I think this new trilogy, this new Apes trilogy, are we calling it the Caesar trilogy? I'm going to call it the Caesar trilogy.
I like that.
Because it is based on Caesar. He is the primary character. But I think it's amazing. And I think it's underrated. And I truthfully put Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the second one, directed by Matt Reeves, I would put that on the level with The Dark Knight as like a really incredible, dark, dramatic, well-made blockbuster.
Yeah, they were so surprising to see, because talk about movies I thought I'd have no interest in, at least the newer ones.
No, and me just, too.
And walk away completely loving them and being so moved emotionally.
Yeah, I remember they kind of came out of nowhere, because I remember seeing the preview for Rise for the Planet of the Apes when that one came out in 2011, and nobody was really interested. And I remember people kind of were laughing at the trailers and stuff like that. And all I knew was that Tom Felton was in it and that Andy Serkis was going to be in it. And I, you know, obviously knew him from Lord of the Rings playing Gollum. And I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. But it never struck my interest. But then I saw the movie and it kind of completely caught me off guard. And I was like, that was surprisingly good. And then Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was just a whole other level. And I absolutely adored it. You informed me that you have never seen, other than this new trilogy, you have never seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah, I've only seen the newer ones. So I saw those in theaters, or at least I saw all those in theaters. But I have not seen any of the originals at all.
That's so insane. So do you know anything about them?
I know that Charlton Heston is in at least one, maybe several. I'm not positive. I really don't know that much. I know that the movies are regarded as,
they're pioneering with like makeup and prosthetics
and things like that.
Yeah, it was a pioneer of that genre. Science fiction was still, because this is the late 1960s. So science fiction was not the go-to genre. And this was also like the end of like the summer of love, quote unquote. You know, it was hippie movements and things like that. Star Trek was big on television, but as far as movies were concerned, it was not a thing that people were into at all. Star Wars had not come out yet. That had not changed everything and made science fiction like a profitable genre. It was still looked down on. So when Planet of the Apes came out in 1968, it was still kind of like, it was a surprise hit. And when we say hit, you know, Star Wars made who knows how much, I think probably close to $1 billion in today's dollars. But like this made about 33.4 million dollars.
That's crazy.
Which is good. I mean, in today's dollars, that's a decent chunk. But back then, that was enough for them to be like, we have a huge hit on our hands.
We've got
to
make 10
more of them. Exactly. So it all kind of, you know, the series was based on a book. The first one was loosely based.
A French book. I do know that.
Exactly. Yep. Do you remember what it was called?
Not in French.
I don't know if many in the audience know this, but the French title of the book roughly translates to Planet of the Apes.
There you go.
That's what we do at Missing Frames.
Who'd
we like
thought?
To educate our audience so that you leave each episode feeling enlightened. But similar ideas, but I think the movie kind of took it in its own direction. Charlton Heston is in the first one.
Okay.
And has that great big booming voice, get your hands off me, you damn dirty apes. You know, or just the entire movie. This movie is basically like, You could probably point like to the Ten Commandments as a defining performance by him, but I almost feel like Planet of the Apes was designed exclusively for him to yell a lot and to just be as Charlton Heston as possible. I remember I saw Planet of the Apes, the first one, as a kid and being really interested. Like, I think it was we either rented it or it was on television. Either way, it was one of those ones where I remember we consciously sat down. We're like, oh, we have to watch this. It was me, my brother, a couple friends, and my dad and one of his friends. And my dad and one of like his friend were like, oh, yeah, it's a classic. And you could, kids have got to watch it. And I remember as a kid just being so like, this is so goofy. And there's a scene in the movie where I distinctly remember we rewound it and watched it over and over again. And this might explain a lot about who I am as a person. But there's a scene in the movie where a couple of the male characters just strip completely naked and go swimming in a lake. Oh. And for some reason, my friends and I found that absolutely hysterical.
Rewind.
And we watched it over and over again. And that's my main memory from my first viewing of Planet of the Apes. I did really enjoy it. It didn't really capture my attention. It's a thoughtful movie. It's not action-packed. It gets better as you get older and you understand the themes behind it and what they're kind of alluding to as far as like race relations and things, issues of the day and age that, you know, obviously as a 10 or 11 year old, you're not really thinking about that. But I got to watch all of them more recently. This was probably a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I bought the whole movie set on sale and I got to go through all of them. And it's one of the most unique series ever. And I don't want to spoil it because we're going to be watching all of them. And I think we're going to include the Tim Burton movie in our viewing.
All right.
Because
apparently history.
It's terrible.
It's part
and
of it.
I haven't seen that in so long that I might as well say I haven't seen it. But I'm fascinated to see what you think. Because there are five movies, and I think they were all, you know, it's the same production team, but they were all made by different filmmakers, with the exception of, I think the last couple were made by the same guy. But it'll be interesting to talk about it after we watch them and come back to review each of them.
Yeah,
see how you think.
I am very curious to see if I will have a sombering experience or if I will just be like, this is crazy goofy.
Right.
Because, you know, with older movies and with this premise, it could go either way, I think, for
yeah.
me. So we'll see. I am very excited. I'm anticipating these movies.
I can say this. The popularity of the series quickly declined with each new entry.
Right.
And with those went the budget. And you can see it as they go on. Although I will say there's the fourth one in particular has some really interesting and dark ideas for the time and was... Of the later ones, more like it just presented more interesting thematic material. But yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. I kind of want to just watch them. I'm a big fan of the series. I know I have a couple friends, my good friend Richie, who's been on the show before. He loves these movies. It's a really unique series. And I love that the new movies are out because I think it's kind of reintroducing people to this series. And I think it does deserve that attention. The new movies are on a whole other level. I mean, I love the first Planet of the Apes.
I had a
but
feeling.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's no question about it.
When did the first one come out?
So it was 68. And they kind of went through, they came out in very quick succession because it was really popular. So it was like 68, 69, or I think it was 68, 70, and then up until like 75. And they're all 20th Century Fox. So it kind of, it did open the door for Star Wars a little bit because I think it was Alan Ladd Jr., who ended up greenlighting Star Wars. And I think part of that may have been inspired not only by, because he loved George Lucas, but I think the success of the Planet of the Apes franchise and their need to kind of replicate that success may have opened the doors for Star Wars to come in and kind of change everything.
Well, and what an interesting premise of a movie to be made in the 60s. Like, I'm just like, how did this get made?
I know.
It's fascinating.
And the stuff that science fiction was a great way to, and Star Trek took advantage of this a lot too, but it was a great way to address a lot of the issues of the time without people realizing it.
Yeah.
You kind of trick people
with entertainment. Trick them.
You dangle the entertainment, whatever, in front of them, and they don't realize they're also kind of getting a very powerful message about tolerance and, you know, all these other ideas. But Planet of the Apes takes full advantage of that. And then the series kind of it kind of goes all over the place. But so how excited are you to watch these movies, especially the Tim Burton movie?
I'm most excited for the Tim Burton movie. No, I'm pretty excited. I'm fairly excited. I hope I don't feel let down. My hope is that I'm not bored, because that's like the curse, you know. So if it's goofy, I'm cool.
Movies aren't boring.
Yeah,
they do get goofy, but
goofy is fine. Yeah. I can enjoy a great older goofy movie. I like the goofy movie, a goofy movie, whatever it's called.
There's a goofy movie and a very goofy movie.
I love all of them. They're all very goofy. So yeah, we'll see. I'm excited. I have pretty high hopes. So we'll see what happens.
All right. So brace yourself, audience. By the time we return to record the second half of this episode, we will have watched all of the Planet of the Apes movies.
So many apes movies.
And we may have a refresher course on the Caesar trilogy. And we might even go ahead and review War for the Planet of the Apes, because that may indeed be out by the time we end up releasing this. So Stay tuned, folks.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Welcome back, everybody. We have experienced apes overload, I would say.
So many apes.
There are too many apes. There are nine apes movies, and less than half of them are good. Actually, I don't know if I'd say that.
I might say that. We'll see. We'll get into it.
So, Sarah, We'll go through this beat by beat. We're going to go through each movie. But overall impressions of just, we already know you've seen Caesar's movies. We'll go through those.
Yeah.
Technically, there are more than those three Caesar movies, but that's the Caesar trilogy. How did you feel about the original Planet of the Apes franchise, seeing it for the first time, just overall?
Overall, I felt a little overwhelmed.
we watched them
every day.
It was a full week of trying to watch them all so we could go see War for the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
And it was a mad rush, so I can't blame you.
It was a fun experience. I will say that whether I liked a particular movie in the franchise or I disliked it, I did enjoy the overall experience. I will say that.
Right. So I, it was fun to rewatch these again. I haven't seen them since 2013, so it's been 4 years. It's been a whole high school lifespan since I've seen the Planet of the Apes movies. So it was really fun to revisit them. And, I found my opinions were pretty much the same as they've always been. But let's just go through one at a time, and we'll just start with Planet of the Apes. So 1968, people had no idea what to expect. This was coming out at a time, as I was saying, where sci-fi was not like a go-to genre for Hollywood. It was not making a lot of money. Planet of the Apes comes out and kind of blows everyone's minds a little bit and sort of opens the doors for not just sci-fi films, but franchise films in general. This kind of kicked off the whole marketing blitz that Star Wars would later like take to another level. So how you had never seen the original Planet of the Apes movie,
right?
And even more insane was you did not know the ending.
I did not know the ending. And man, was that an ending.
I think it's amazing. Because we were watching it and you're like, wait, are they back on Earth? And I was like, no. They just said they landed on another planet and it's the future. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
and
I was like, realized, it looks kind of earthy, but whatever.
Well, they had to film it on Earth. I mean, technically it is Earth. But I, when I realized you did not know, I was like, oh, I want to see how this plays out.
That ending was spectacular.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was just fun. And it was like a, oh my God, moment, you know?
And that's what this franchise, especially the original movies, kind of, each one has kind of a gut punch of an ending, except for Battle for the Planet of the Apes. But, you know, what's funny about Planet of the Apes? I really enjoy it. I think it's a fun movie. I don't think it's a great movie. It's a classic, but I don't know if I'd call it great. I think it's a little too silly. There's a lot of, I think it's awesome. I talk about in the pre part of this episode, of the before portion, about how this is like, yeah, Charlton Heston at his most manly. But what's really cool about this movie is it took Charlton Heston, who was considered like the American hero, one of the great actors. He's got that big booming voice. He's always the hero. And they reduce him to kind of being beat up the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then they end it with him lose. Essentially, like, he loses.
He lost.
He escapes. But it's like, that is such an insane ending to see this big American hero just like on the ground, just like in complete despair.
Yeah, and then roll credits, and you're like, oh my God, there's nothing left. Like, how devastating.
Yeah, I know. And it was, it must have been, I mean, it clearly was such a shock for audiences of the time, but even now, that's still, it's still effective.
Yeah. And just that shot of Lady Liberty, you know, just the spikes of her crown. I didn't even know what it was. And then they pan out and you're just like, oh my God. And it hits you. And
right.
That was definitely, I think out of all of them, I'll just say that was one of my favorite moments. Like, not necessarily my favorite film, my favorite moments of the franchise, at least of the originals, for sure. Although there are a couple real fun ones that we'll get into.
In the future one. But yeah, Charlton Heston is great. And it's, again, people talk a lot about the social commentary and it's there, but I almost feel like it's drowned out by, I feel like Planet of the Apes, it literally was somebody saying, guys, what if we told a story where a human lands on a planet where apes can talk and humans are slaves? That's like the crux of the entire thing.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, social commentary aside, and it's there and it's definitely a smart movie in that sense, but I don't think the movie really goes beyond that concept. It's very goofy. There are a lot of like goofy puns, like where I don't think this is an actual line from the movie, but it's things like an ape will say, well, everyone knows that such and such is an ape's best friend. And it's like they put a lot of like puns and plays on phrases and they replace man with ape. And it's like really goofy. And the entire movie kind of does that. And it's like,
yeah.
But did you get the sense that it kind of like,
It was very punny.
Yeah, it was punny, and it was goofy. And there, like I said, there's some great scenes where, like, the scene where he's on trial is very clearly evocative of. And I remember one of the screenwriters was going through, I think it was Michael Wilson. He had, I think, been put on trial about, like, are you a communist and da-da-da. So he took those experiences and actually put them in that scene.
Very timely.
So it's really cool how they did that. And it's great because science fiction has always, and it continues to be, a way to get these big ideas out there. And Star Trek took advantage of this as well. In the 60s, you couldn't quite comment specifically on things like race and things like that overtly. You would get caught. But sci-fi allowed you the means to look at it from another angle and basically pull a fast one on audiences and get like a very good message out there without hitting them over the head with it or making it obvious. So kudos to them for doing that with this movie.
Yeah.
I do have a question for you, and I have a question just for the audience in general, because I'm very interested to see what you think. Without this, the movie's ending, the amazing, one of the great twist endings of all time, is this movie great?
This movie is okay.
Yeah.
The ending is great.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think this movie is fun, and it's like, it's great. And John Chambers, who did the makeup for the movie, I believe I mean, the makeup is wonderful.
It's fantastic.
And it's fun, and it's goofy, and it's quirky. But I really, truly believe if you take out the ending, the movie's like, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it pioneered some stuff, and that's awesome. And because of this movie, we got some really fun movies coming up that we're going to talk about. So I love it for that. But when I think back on this movie, when one day we show our kids this movie, I'm going to be like, oh, it's the ending. Like, that's what you're like, let's see this because of the ending.
And
you know, it's not because of the bulk or the meat of the movie. It's because of the finish.
That's, and I love this movie, but I hesitate to say love in a way that, like, I would say, like, oh, I love The Godfather or E.T. or something else like that. Because I think this movie really succeeds because of its ending. I think the entire movie itself is not as strong as its ending. And I wonder if people love this movie so much because they can't... I mean, the ending, obviously you can't talk about this movie without the ending, but it is like, I think a conversation needs to happen where it's like, do we love this movie on its own terms, or is the ending what we're really talking about when we talk about how great this movie is?
Yeah, and if it was just a normal ending, what would you think?
Yeah.
You know, if it was just like he just escapes and he's like, cool, I made it, we're done.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It pans off and he rides off into the sunset.
Again,
literally,
yeah,
rides off into the sunset.
It's an interesting argument to make because, people out there are like, well, you don't have the movie without the ending and da da da.
And that's true.
And that's very true.
Very
the ending
true.
Is what makes the movie. But I'm the type of person, it's like, I need the whole movie to work. And then the ending is like icing on the cake. The ending to this movie, I feel like, is like half the cake and the icing and the cherry on top. And then the rest is like, oh, this is a good, fun movie.
And I love a good twist, especially when I don't see it coming, because it just blew my mind.
So speaking of twists,
yes,
let's talk about a twist that I don't think
anyone would ever see coming. So let's move on to Beneath the Planet of the Apes, the sequel. So this was kind of, nobody really wanted to make a sequel. The director did not return for the sequel. They basically had a surprise hit on their hands. So Fox was like, we want a sequel right now. And it took them a while to come up with an idea. Well, not a while. I mean, this movie came out just, I think, a couple years later. And Charlton Heston was kind of like, oh, I don't really want to be in it. Can you kill my character off? And they're like, well, how about we, you show up, but you're not in most of the movie, and then we'll kill you off at the end. And he was like, okay, cool. Beneath the Planet of the Apes, for its first hour, or well, so the first 15 minutes kind of wraps, it's continuing exactly from where the first one left off, and it's completely bonkers. Like, it's like, yeah. it's Nova and Taylor riding a horse, and then like there's a weird lightning storm, and then Taylor falls into a wall and disappears. Yep. And it's like
very Twin Peaky.
Yeah, it's very David Lynch. And it's like, yeah, what is happening in this movie? Where did this come from? And then the movie turns into a almost beat for beat remake of the first Planet of the Apes.
Hey, I know what worked. Let's do it again.
Exactly. So there's a new character, Brent.
Do we really want to call him a new character?
No, he's not. He's basically Taylor.
I mean, physically, he looks like
Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
They got somebody who looks like him and sounds like him.
Yeah.
And basically Brent goes through all the same things as Taylor. Like, it's like, so the, a good chunk of this movie is him like, my God, it's a Planet of Apes. And I was like, well, of course, we saw this already.
And I can't refresh my memory. I can't remember. Did they recap in this one?
They did. So the beginning is like they show kind of the last 10 minutes of the first
and
movie.
I thought that was really interesting because it's been a while since I saw a movie with a straight recap.
Yeah.
Where I was like, wait, this is interesting. We just saw this.
Right.
And you're recapping a movie you're about to do the same movie of.
That
so
was
that's
a device.
Weird.
Yeah, it was a device a lot of sequels use because home video didn't exist at the time. So a lot of times, unless you were watching on television, which I don't think even that, I'm not sure was happening yet. It was basically like, okay, people probably haven't seen this for a couple years. So let's remind them what happened. Although how could you forget that ending?
I know.
But yeah, so Beneath the Planet of the Apes, it's like for 30, 40 minutes, it's like a really dull, like beat for beat remake of Planet of the Apes. And it's like, really, we're doing this all again? Okay, it's a Planet of the Apes. And then when they go beneath the Planet of the Apes, it turns into the most disturbing, insane movie
weird ever.
It's one of the most insane things I think I've ever seen. So they go beneath, they're like looking at all this stuff, like, oh, the subways and like all these things, and then they stumble upon an evolved human society that has psychic powers and can control people with their minds, and also look like aliens from outer space. Like, they have human masks on and they peel them off, and they're like just like weird, veiny, disturbing looking creatures, and they
worship
an atom bomb.
Yes.
They sing terrifying songs to an atom bomb. And it's like, where did this come? So suddenly the movie goes from being one of the least interesting movies I've ever seen to one of the most fascinating
path I took. Yeah, I was like, this is boring. We have literally just watched this. I think we watched the first two kind of back to back, like in the same night, I believe. So I was like, okay, we got a recap of that movie.
Yeah.
And now we have the same movie. And then, oh my God, what is happening? As soon as he goes underground, it's like, it's a different movie. Gosh, I don't even know what to say about it. It was fascinating. I had a lot of fun with this one, I will say.
Yeah, I remember seeing it for the first time and not quite believing what I was seeing. I was like, when, this is no longer Planet of the Apes. This is Planet of Weird Mutant, Terrifying, Bizarre. And then so Brent is reunited with Taylor. The weird mutant people make them almost kill each other. Like, he almost kills Nova too.
Yes.
And
a lot of violence in this one.
This movie is insanely violent. This is like a G-rated movie, and I'm shocked because most of these the originals are rated G. And what they got away with, especially in this one, is insane. Like,
it's like
the movie ends with Taylor and Brent get brutally murdered. Like, they're both shot and it's like bloody. It's like, how did this get, like, how did they get a G rating? And so Brent is killed. The apes invade the radioactive people. And then Charlton Heston actually suggested this ending, and kudos to him, because he wanted to make sure they couldn't make any more sequels. Obviously, he failed. But his idea was like, well, what if I just blow up the atom bomb that they're worshiping. And the producers are like, hey, that's not half bad. So the end of the movie is Charlton Heston, like his last dying breath. He's
already been shot up.
He's been shot and he activates the bomb and the planet
explodes. I loved it. Oh my God. What an ending. Man, if there's something these movies get right, it's the end. Like, they blew up the planet.
Everybody
dies.
Everyone dies. It's like, and then there's like this voiceover that says, I can't remember. It's like, a green star in the universe has just been extinguished and nobody will care. Essentially, that's what it says. And it's like, that's the end. And I remember your reaction was just so, you're like, what?
Oh my gosh. I loved it. It was just like the perfect ending for such a bizarre movie. It's like, oh right. Yeah, of course it went in that direction.
So it's like Beneath the Planet of the Apes is by all accounts not a good movie, but the second half elevates it to like, you have to see this. Like, I don't know if I'd recommend it outright, but I would say, look, if you just want to be completely like just completely caught off guard, just watch this movie and try to understand what's happening. I remember you were like, so how did they even make another one? Like, how did they do this? And they did. They made another one because, again, they were like, this will ensure there will never be another Planet of the Apes movie. But again, it made money, and they were able to make another one called Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And my friend Richie describes this as the Star Trek 4 of Planet of the Apes movies, which is an apt description because it's very much like, you know, it's a crew, like Star Trek 4 is basically the crew goes back in time to the 80s and have to kind of figure out how to navigate. Escape is very much the same way. It's kind of, for 90% of the movie, it's a comedy. It's like, how are these apes like interacting with, you know, they go back in time. They've escaped from the planet as it exploded. They got into the spaceship and it's Cornelius and Zira. So Roddy McDowall and Kim Hunter are back again and their characters who everybody loves return. And they end up in like 1970s, like modern day for the time, Earth.
Yeah.
And so it's basically, it's a reverse of the first movie. It's like instead of an ape being on a instead of a human being on a planet of apes, it's now apes on a planet of humans. So again, it's kind of a repeat of the first movie, but it's a little bit more comical. They kind of play it a bit more overtly for laughs.
Yes.
Then it takes a really dark turn when they have a kid and then the government decides, oh, they can't live. You know, they basically trick them into giving information about where they come from and realize that humans are enslaved. These apes are a danger to us. And they go about like killing them and their child. And again, these movies have the darkest endings.
Darkest endings. And especially for this one where you have like a slapsticky comedy for the first half of the movie and there are these apes dressed up in bell bottoms in the 70s
they go like,
and making jokes.
Yeah, there's a montage of them like going on a shopping spree.
And they're celebrity, right? Yeah. Like they are the ape Kardashians of the 70s. And then it's like, no, wait. Let's actually murder them all in a really devastating ending. Like,
I don't know what the
heart can't take it.
They're always like, we have to come up with a really shocking ending, even when it doesn't make sense. Like, it's like it doesn't work for the tone of the movie that we're making.
Right.
It's more for shock value. Again, that kind of was established by the first movie, even though it's in line with the rest of the movie. But it's like this one, it does feel particularly jarring because of how lighthearted most of the movie is. But so what did you did you enjoy Escape from the Planet of the Apes?
I did. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I, you know, the ending actually, for the first time, I felt sad.
Yeah.
Zira and
Cornelius are kind of...
They're fantastic characters. Yeah, they're actually great.
Actually more likable. You know, Charlton Heston is kind of like... He's kind of a cocky, like, machismo kind of guy.
Yeah, I didn't really care for his character. So, I couldn't relate. I was just like, you're kind of like that annoying guy.
Yeah, that was kind of the idea. Is like they wanted to set him up as like, look at this macho guy who gets taken down and beaten up by apes. That's the idea. But, you know, Cornelius and Zira are basically, they're the most likable characters.
And they're just genuine. They're true to themselves. They're kind to other people, even when they don't understand them. And that's a great lesson in and of itself, right?
Right.
So for them to just be really brutally murdered is awful. And, you know, and you also think that their child is murdered,
they killed a monkey.
They killed a baby monkey. Don't worry, though. It's a different monkey. But it's like, but they still shot a baby. I know. Like, it's, my God.
It is really horrifying. Yeah.
And you know, and also something really interesting, especially I think for the early 70s, is they talk even, you know, because we're seeing these apes as human in a sense, mm-hmm. right? Because they've treated them as humans and such. You know, there's a point in the movie where they essentially want Zero to have an abortion,
yeah.
which is very interesting. I mean, they do not use the word abortion.
Sure. But as way too like, taboo. Take care of it.
You take care of it. Like, and they're knocked not up
when Jonah Hill's no. like a shmushmortion.
It's not like, yeah, it's not like spaying a dog. It's like, no, you are pregnant with child and we are going to take care of it. And it's yeah. like, that was really interesting. And again, what was this movie rated?
know, you know, it's G, family it's friendly. G. Everyone yeah. dies at the end.
Everyone. Yeah. Bring your kids. So I just thought it was really interesting. And, you know, obviously racial conflict was a huge theme. Mm-hmm. And that's also timely, you know, you have the Black Panthers and all these cases in the news right. during that time. So it was, I thought I really liked this one. You know, it was disturbing and it was sad, very sad. Like it ended and I was just like, my heart felt heavy.
Yeah.
So it was, I finally got an emotional response. This is the first movie besides a WTF shock. Moment. Yeah. I got a, wow, that one hurt a little bit. So for me so far, I was like, okay. This yeah, is it. I like
exactly.
it.
And, you know, the second one was missing a lot of the social commentary. It was just kind of like, it's a Planet of the Apes again, and now weird sci-fi ending. This one is a little bit more, like you said, a bit more about, like, they kind of bring the themes of the first movie back a little bit by kind of reversing the fish out of water story so that the apes are the fish out of water this time.
Yeah.
They're able to kind of revisit it.
Yeah, but it was very timely.
It doesn't feel as... like stale as Beneath the Planet of the Apes does. It actually feels a little fresh, even though you're like, okay, this is a repeat of the first movie again. Yeah,
it was more creative, I think.
Right. And then that brings us to Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, the fourth movie. This was the first film in the franchise to be rated PG, which is a big deal. And we watched on the Blu-ray, you have the choice between theatrical and the extended director's cut. And we watched the extended director's cut. I don't remember. I remember the theatrical being pretty violent, but oh my God.
Yeah.
The extended version of this movie, I cannot believe that Fox let them make it. I mean, obviously they didn't let them release it, but it is so dark.
This and is a heavy R rating yeah. if this was made now, I think.
Yeah.
Well, maybe PG-13, but. There were some headshots.
They're like headshots,
you know?
Where like yeah. gorillas' faces are like exploding in blood. Yeah. Like humans get like hit in the face and like blood explodes. It's like there's so much violence in this movie.
Just piles of dead people, mutilated yeah. bodies. Yeah. I mean, it is a disturbing film.
Yeah, this is,
to say the least.
I think this one got the most visceral reaction out
yeah.
of both of us.
And it deals with slavery.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is the theme of the movie.
And
it's slavery.
It was kind of a, again, a comment on the riots going on at
yep.
the time, because this is like 1972. So there was a lot of comment of police brutality and things like that. And it's
the civil rights
it's
movement.
A little, yeah. It's yeah. a little too, and especially considering that there are a lot of issues in this day and age. This one, Conquest, feels very timely and relevant.
Yeah, it does.
And that makes it all the more disturbing.
Yep.
So, and this is also the Caesar trilogy that exists now. This is the closest in kind of tone and story to what those are, where it's basically like, you know, the apes are rising up against the humans. They're led by an ape named Caesar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Roddy McDowall is back again, but he's playing... Cornelius and Zira's son, Caesar, who was raised
right.
by, what's his name? Ricardo Montalban, and in a circus and kind of hidden from the world. So in this one, apes are enslaved by humans. They basically, there's a mysterious virus that wiped out all cats and dogs. So basically they treat apes as pets and slaves. They have them doing household things. And Caesar is kind of hidden in the midst of that. And humanity is kind of searching, is there a talking ape somewhere? We're trying to keep our eyes peeled. And basically, Caesar and Ricardo Montalban's character get kidnapped, and Caesar is enslaved, and Ricardo Montalban gets a forced confession and leaps out the window and kills himself from yeah. a building. It's like this movie is insanely dark, and Caesar yeah. basically revolts, gets the apes to join up with him, and there's a huge showdown with a brutal showdown like where apes and men get killed. And it was 1972 for a movie like this, a family, quote unquote, family friendly franchise to release this entry is insane. And the movie's short. It's only like it's a little less than an hour and a half. And the entire movie, the reason I wouldn't say it's a great movie is, again, because this movie is very single-minded in its focus. It's basically about a conflict between men and apes and their ultimate battle. So there's not a lot of depth to it, but it's extremely effective overall. Yes.
I mean, it has a singular theme and it falls through with that. And you don't get much of an arc, I guess, but it's effective. I mean, it's sad and it's just very depressing. And it's, like you said, it's timely. Yeah. It's interesting to watch these movies that were made in the 70s and then be in 2017 and being like, oh, God, this is weird.
Yeah. And so the theatrical cut, what they did is they had the director remove some of the violence and the blood and things like that, and also put a happy ending at the end. So Caesar, they capture the main human villain, and Caesar's like, you know, we will enslave you. And then in the theatrical version, it shows him saying, and now we will live in peace with the humans. And it's like, wait, what? Huh?
Bizarre. Like, why? I mean, at least make, if you want to go a happier ending, fine, but like, make it connect to the dang movie.
Yeah. Like, so I think they were kind of like, oh.
Talk about lip service.
Yeah. And to be fair, watching the director's cut, you can't blame Fox for being like, oh, maybe you just cut back a little bit on this. But the extended cut is basically like Caesar is like, yes, now the humans are our slaves, and they beat a man to death. They beat the main villain to death.
To death. All of them.
It's so disturbing. I feel like that makes Conquest probably the most effective of the series since the first one.
And it was a shorter movie, right? Yeah. So basically you have a shorter movie that's just filled with murder and suicide and like just brutality. And so it's nonstop after the first like 30 minutes of the movie. The last hour is just is just nonstop brutality. It's not, and it's hard to watch.
It is. And it's not like it's not an enjoyable.
No,
like
the other ones, I will say I did not enjoy this film. I'm glad I watched it. Yeah. It had a good message isn't exactly what I mean, but it had a strong message, which I think is important. But did I like it? Would I want to go back for seconds? Yeah, absolutely not.
You don't want to really. And that's kind of how audiences of the time responded.
Yeah.
And, you know, it made decent money, but these movies, as they went on, the budgets became smaller and the box office receipts became smaller. And this one suffered a lot from the fact that it was very brutal and violent and kind of lost their family audience. But so after that, they kind of decided, like, let's make it a little bit lighter, and we're going to just wrap up the whole series with Battle for the Planet of the Apes. And this was the following year. Roddy McDowall returns, the director of Conquest returns, J. Lee Thompson. And they were like, let's just make the concluding entry in the franchise because we don't know where else to take it. It had the lowest budget, it had $1.7 million, and it made the least amount of money. It's also the only Planet of the Apes movie from the original series that I would say is, like, bad.
Yeah, this was rough to watch. I was bored. If I remember correctly, I was kind of just like looking at my phone and being like, all right, I'm not engaged in this film at all.
It is not engaging in the slightest. And it doesn't tell us anything new. It kind of is like apes and humans are sort of living together. Humans are kind of apes' slaves, but not like in a brutal mistreatment sort of way that apes were in Conquest. It's just like they serve apes. But there's nothing in this movie that's new. It doesn't present any new facts. It's like basically all the same
things. It's recycled.
Yeah, it's all recycled information. It's only an hour and a half. It felt like 3 hours. Like, it never ends. I remember checking the time on the movie, and it was like, oh, we only have 10 minutes left. And then it felt like it was 2 hours. And I kept checking. I was like, how is this going so slowly? This is such a boring movie.
Again, we have an ending that's I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
To jump ahead, because I think the most interesting part of it was the ending, because like you said, it was kind of a snooze fest. But then at the end, you see a statue of Caesar.
Yeah.
And what does he do, Sean?
Oh, the statue inexplicably sheds a tear.
Yeah, a statue made of stone cries. And then roll credits.
Yeah, I lost it. I forgot that happened. And I thought that was hysterical. It's like, it's such a goofy image, and it was just like, wait, in no way does this make sense.
No,
like,
why is he crying, and what does it symbolize?
Yeah, it's
that's
like,
what
happy?
I didn't
is
get
he sad is
Maybe, is he a statue of stone?
Yeah, is he trapped inside the statue trying to get out? You know, it's like it makes no sense in any regard. But yeah, there's not much I have to say about Battle for the Planet of the Apes. It's really boring, and it's the only one I would say I do not like out of those original five. And I think a lot of people feel it's the weakest.
I was about to say, you're in good company, because everybody thinks it sucks.
It definitely does. Now we move on to, and one of us was very devoted to this movie marathon, I want to say. One of us was a little too devoted to this movie marathon, because you sat this one out.
I did. Well, I watched a good 8 minutes, let's be fair, and then left. And then I was like, well, laundry sounds fun.
Made a wise, very wise decision.
Yeah, I walked in and out of the living room and caught a few scenes here and there. So I'll let you chat about this the most, and then I can give my 7 minute impression.
I made the unwise decision of watching in art to be as complete as possible. I watched the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie that was released in 2001, summer 2001. It's bad. It's really bad. I was interested in watching it because I was like, oh, I remember seeing this as a kid. I'd like to just get it out there. But it's not good. It's like a remake of Planet of the Apes, but without anything that makes Planet of the Apes interesting. It's basically just like, okay, human astronaut lands on Planet of Apes, gets enslaved, and must escape. Like, just like as bare bones plot as you can get. Not a single interesting character. The makeup is great. The cast is insane. It's got like Paul Giamatti, Tim Roth, Helena Bonham Carter, Michael Clarke Duncan. It's like there's an insane amount of talent involved. And nothing about this movie is worth watching. And then they try to, I'm going to keep this brief because the less said about this movie, the better. But then they try to have a shocking ending. And it makes no sense. Like, the first movie's ending is effective because it not only is shocking, but it also is disturbing. It basically says, like, this guy who's been like, yes, humanity, I will get back to a civilized place, realizes that the civilization blew themselves out because they were so like warmongers and all that stuff. They basically just blew themselves up, which is even more disturbing. This movie tries to have a shocking ending, but it means nothing. Basically, Mark Wahlberg gets his spaceship back and flies through a time warp and lands on Earth and discovers the Lincoln Memorial is now an Abraham Lincoln. And
Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. And favorite.
And he's like, what's going on? And then a bunch of like cops show up and they're all apes, and it's like, so it's like the ending means nothing. It's like, so he just lands and it's just for shock value, but it's also really stupid. Like, the apes are dressed in cop uniforms.
Yeah. And I feel like with Tim Burton, there's a school of people that like love him and are devoted to him. And then there are people that are like, Tim Burton.
I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan. I haven't seen a lot of his great movies. I really enjoyed Big Fish and I really enjoyed Beetlejuice. Haven't really enjoyed much else that he's done that I've seen. This could have been made by anybody. It does not feature anything distinguishing as far as an identity goes. It's like, the makeup is really good. Rick Baker did the makeup and that's it.
And apparently there were about 10 years of development hell before this movie launched. So we had people like James Cameron and Chris Columbus that were going to be doing this movie. So when I, on my whole 7 minutes, I kept thinking, well, what if it was done by these other people? Just got it curious, and, you know, but I don't know. Tim Burton, I think for me, he has hits and misses. This is definitely a miss. But I am no expert, as I have only seen clips. I saw Clip Show and it was not great.
Exactly. it took 10 years for them to get Planet of the Apes back off the ground. Tim Burton and Mark Wahlberg killed this franchise so bad that
they murdered it.
It took a long time for them to recover. But we talked a little bit about this in the pre-show, but I remember they announced Rise for the Planet of the Apes, like, oh, a franchise reboot. And I remember, I think everyone's response was, who cares? Like, it's like, nobody wants this. The Andy Serkis factor was interesting, but it's like, James Franco is great in the right movies, but not great in like big blockbusters. So I was like, I don't know how I feel about seeing a movie where he's the lead actor. But Rise of the Planet of the Apes is shockingly good. Like, it's not great, but it's really good.
For what it is, I enjoyed it.
And it's more, I don't know if I'd say it's better than the original Planet of the Apes, but it is a more emotionally involving and satisfying story overall. from beginning to end. You are involved in this character. Shockingly, you care about the characters. You even James Franco, who is actually really good, you care about him. You care about Caesar, the ape, who this trilogy follows. And that was the most insane thing about it to me, is that I was like, that wasn't amazing, but I really enjoyed it, and I'm interested to see.
I wanted more.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I really liked it. And I think Andy Serkis, like, man.
Makes it. Yeah.
You know, he makes it. Without him, I'm not sure how I would feel exactly.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, James Franco was really good. The supporting cast was good. Tom Felton was a joy. Yeah. Felton, what a little jerk.
My God, what a brat. And
he deserved what he got.
Yeah, this movie, it has a lot of goofy callbacks to the original.
Yeah.
But it's like the movie, it would have been one thing if the movie was like just a soulless remake or soulless reboot that's just like shamelessly referencing the movie. It doesn't feel like that because the movie has genuine soul. Like it's like it's telling a story. It's telling a thoughtful story. And it's an evolving story. And then they take it to the next level with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which, again, as I said in the pre-show, I think is absolutely brilliant. I think it's a beautiful film, extremely moving, and totally deserving to be on in a category with like The Dark Knight, Empire Strikes Back, as like great middle chapters of blockbuster trilogies.
And what a cast. Yeah. I mean, what a cast. Like every single person that worked on this movie was just brilliant.
Yeah,
and I love Jason Clarke, Kerry Russell, Gary Oldman. They're really good. The human cast,
a lot of people are don't dismiss this movie, but they're kind of like, the apes are great, the humans suck. I don't agree at all.
No, I think everyone was great.
I think I definitely feel story-wise, obviously the apes are more interesting. But
yeah.
The humans have a great motivation. There's a little bit of clunky expositional dialogue at the beginning where you can tell they're like, okay, we need to insert a scene here where the humans explain to each other. So the audience, there are a lot of scenes between Jason Clarke and Kerry Russell where it's basically like, yes, I know that your child has died and da da da. And it's like a little clunky exposition. Their performances are good enough that
it's
it makes
forgiven.
It work. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And once the apes and the humans start integrating and interacting with each other, I find it extremely moving.
I do
and
too.
I love Jason Clarke in this movie because he is very, it sounds goofy, but he's very human and he's very sincere. And I really love I loved him in this movie.
And he's very brave. That's what I got. He was a very brave human.
Yeah.
And it was kind of refreshing to see, you know, a little sympathy with the humans for once.
Exactly.
You know, but also not take away from the apes and their plight and, you know, just go into the simian flu and kind of discover what exactly happened. And I liked, you know.
So the difference. So Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Rupert Wyatt did a great job just with making a very solid movie. But Dawn from the beginning, like, so the opening is just this beautiful, you know, Michael Giacchino. I hope I said his name right. Michael, if you're listening, please forgive me if I got that wrong. But he's one of the great composers of our day and age. And it's beautiful, like, score, like, it's just a piano. And it's playing over this kind of montage of, like, you see the map of America, or the world, really, and the kind of the spread of the simian flu, and you hear like they kind of have news footage and people talking about it wiping out humanity, and it's very moving and very somber. And it's like Rise was a little bit more like let's kind of make this a appealing blockbuster. Dawn is more of a thoughtful character meditation, and that's why I love it so much. And Andy Serkis, again, motion capture is taken to a whole other level, and you can see that, you know, it's you don't think of these apes as CGI.
This movie looked good.
Yeah. And
looked great.
But even, you know, the cast is great, but Andy Serkis and Toby Cabell, who plays Koba, Koba is one of the great villains, I think, of modern cinema.
Absolutely.
You understand his motivations. You understand his
anger.
He's
a relatable villain, which is scary, but also very powerful.
Yeah,
you know?
It's more effective. And I love the scene where, because Koba's viewpoint is he raised in a lab, tortured by humans and experimented on. So he has an extreme disdain for humanity, which is understandable.
Absolutely.
He's a bit too inclined to violence, but it's not you while you don't want to justify violence, you understand why he feels like we need to get away. We need to fight these humans. We need to, they are not
worth it. He believes they're all evil.
Right. And Caesar is the opposite. He's seen humanity's good and he doesn't believe in violence. Obviously there are Martin Luther King and Malcolm X parallels here.
Absolutely.
It's not subtle, but it's also not like hit you over the head. It doesn't affect the storytelling. But I loved the scene where like Caesar is like, we'll just let the humans do their work and, you know, they'll do their human work and they'll get out of here. And Koba is basically like, human work. And he points at all the scars and he's basically saying human work, human work. And he's pointing at like every scar he has and explaining it as human work. And that is such a powerful moment and so simple. It's just, I love this movie because Matt Reeves kind of lets those moments play. And Matt Reeves is a big character director and he really hones in on the characters in this movie. And, you know, the action is incredible, but you feel dirty about it. Like the scenes where the apes and the humans are fighting each other, you don't feel like, yeah, this is a rousing action scene. It feels brutal and disturbing. And again, makes it much more effective because what these movies do so well is they show that war is not like a fun, like, yes, this is awesome. It's like, but we are invested in the stories on both sides of the spectrum. And because of that, it's like you guys both have good reasoning and we don't want to see you fight each other. And it's through the misunderstanding of Koba and the misunderstanding of Gary Oldman's character Dreyfus that this showdown happens.
Yeah.
Misunderstandings and quick acts of violence contribute to just these things. And it's very reflective of how these things happen in reality.
How quickly things escalate
when misunderstanding and a lack of communication and a lack of willingness to listen basically pushes aside all reason.
Yeah, and essentially saying that, yes, this person or this character did something horrible and reprehensible, but can we stop it?
Yeah.
And the answer is always no.
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, people are human and, well, not even human, you know.
Yeah.
It's just inherently our... people good or are they bad? You know, are they inherently bad and they have to supplement it with good things, or are they inherently good and they make mistakes? And which is it? Well, and do we know?
There's a great quote in Men in Black where Will Smith is talking to Tommy Lee Jones about, like, why don't you tell people that aliens exist? You know, people are smart. They understand. And Tommy Lee Jones says, a person is smart. People are dumb, stupid, quick to panic, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And I think that speaks to this movie because you have very good people trying to understand and help and communicating.
Through very poor decisions.
But as a whole, humanity, represented by kind of Gary Oldman, is just like generic, like those are animals, they don't care. You know, when you are looking at things as like apes versus Caesar or Koba, or like looking at the person, you are dismissing them and you are saying like, we can wipe them out, we can fight them. You know, when you start to personalize and start to understand, it makes a huge difference. And that's a lot of why this movie works. And what is so sad about this movie and why I find it so effective is at the end, when Jason Clarke's character is talking with Caesar and he's basically like, they're calling in an airstrike, they're calling in soldiers, they're going to come kill you. And Caesar's like, you know, we have to face this and there's no escape from it.
Yeah.
And Jason Clarke is basically it's such an emotional scene, even thinking about it, because I get I'm very moved by it, because Jason Clarke basically says, I really thought we had a chance. And Caesar says, I did too. And the really sad thing about it is, it doesn't matter, because humanity has to fight for its survival and they see apes as a threat to that survival and there's no chance for them. And it's a very emotional thing when you put it on a very human level of like these two people who have been trying to understand and help each other throughout the whole movie. And I love it. It's a very complex and very thoughtful and ultimately a very effective film. And I think it's one of the great films of the 21st century. Now that brings us to War for the Planet of the Apes, which
we just saw,
just released this weekend, and everybody should go see it. It's a really, really good movie. I guess we'll go into non-spoiler reviews first. What did you think of War for the Planet of the Apes?
I really loved it. And I say love, but I also mean that I was very moved by it
Yeah.
And it was, you know, as Woody Harrelson's character would say, very emotional, you know, it from start to finish, I felt all the things, you know, yeah. I was laughing and crying and just really like sucked into the movie.
Yeah.
So I, you know, overall, I really, really loved this one.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I loved it. I think what was holding me back is, again, the emotional relationship between Caesar and a human character in Dawn and that commentary there. This is very apes-centric.
It
is. Dawn for the Planet of the Apes gave us a little bit of a dynamic with Koba and Caesar's relationship with Koba and kind of how their relationship reaches an explosive end. This War for the Planet of the Apes is more a straightforward kind of revenge story. And because of that, it's a little bit less complex than I feel Dawn was. And Woody Harrelson, as great as he is, his character isn't all that complex to me. He's very kind of single-minded, very kind of crazy. They, without going to spoilers, they try to kind of explain what his motivations are. But I never felt as strongly about him as I did about Koba. Koba was very complex, very
I agree with you
well-developed
there.
Character.
Yeah.
So it kind of took away from me. I was very moved by War for the Planet of the Apes, and I was very engaged the entire time. But I wanted it to kind of ascend and go to the next level, and it didn't really for me just by the sheer nature of choosing to kind of go into a revenge story method with Caesar. Overall, I enjoyed it. Let's get into spoilers a little bit. So if you haven't seen War for the Planet of the Apes, fast forward a bit. And we'll see you on the other side. But so War for the Planet of the Apes, this is a very conclusive movie. It yes. wraps up Caesar's story. It ends with Caesar dying. He basically gets his family his family is murdered in this movie.
Yeah.
What a terrible way to start a movie. I mean, not terrible in any sense, but he's basically getting revenge for the murder of his family at the hands of the Colonel, Woody Harrelson's character. It's a very dark way to open a movie. His son and his wife are killed, and only his infant son survives.
Yeah.
And basically the whole movie is Caesar wanting to get revenge. He leaves the apes. Because of that, the apes get kidnapped by the colonel, and they're forced into like a labor camp, and which Caesar eventually gets captured and brought into as well. And then the whole thing kind of becomes a great escape-esque how they kind of get out. I thought Caesar's death was maybe a little silly, because it's like after they've been traveling for days, Caesar's kind of like, yes, this is good. We found the place to live. And then he kind of keels over and dies. And it's like, nobody noticed you were injured. And like, this seems a little ridiculous that you travel. You had a death, like a fatal injury that you were able to carry with you for 2 days and not say anything about it. You didn't say, here, get me medical help. I'm just going to die.
Well, I do. I'm going to disagree with you because I think that the whole movie, and it starts at the beginning where they need to get to safer ground. They need to make a new home. And all he wants to do is get his family home, right? So I think, you know, and I think they only say it's a couple days. So I'm not going to be as cynical as you, because I thought his death was beautiful. I cried like a baby. Yes, it might be dramatic, but he is looking at his ape family in their promised land,
yeah.
And he's happy, and then he passes.
Yeah,
and I was just like, oh no,
here I go. That overall is effective. I thought it was a little, just the cliche, it felt a little cliche to me to have like, the hero has made it, and now he will keel over.
Yeah, and I do agree that maybe it's a little cliche, but I still got the emotional gut punch,
sure.
So I forgive it, because yeah. I still loved Caesar
yeah.
in all these movies, and for me, it was like a very conclusive, very final chapter for
yeah.
him. And I know we're probably going to get more apes movies, so I'm very curious
yeah,
to see where
movie,
we go.
It does leave it open for more,
it does.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Again, I hope if they do make more, I really want Matt Reeves to be involved. I know he's going off to do
yeah.
Batman, which honestly is the best news I've heard related to the Batman movie since
yeah.
it started. Very excited for that. But I remember being kind of bummed that Matt Reeves wasn't a director pick for the new Star Wars trilogy. But I remember thinking, you know, I'd rather have a great Matt Reeves third Apes movie than a great Matt Reeves Star Wars movie. Because Star Wars is
yeah.
such an enterprise unto itself that it's like with Apes, you get a little bit more leeway to be more creative and more daring with your story. That's exactly what he did. War felt a little safe to me, but it felt right. It felt emotionally right. It was conclusive. It did not conform to anything that you would think was studio meddling, maybe except for the fact that it's like you feel like they could keep making them. But I feel like I'm so happy he got to make this third movie. And he's expressed, he's like, I really want to come back and tell more stories in this universe. And I really hope he does. I hope he does the Batman, and maybe we get a few years off between Apes movies, but then he can come back.
I welcome a break, especially if they're going to do a soft reboot, because with Caesar gone, who's in charge? Yeah, what does the world look like?
And what kind of sucks is you take Andy Serkis out of the equation. I don't know about
that. Yeah, and we also, let's talk about the simian flu. Like, now what's happening, right? So we have the next level of progression of this disease,
right, which is basically tying it back into the first movie. We're reverting, you know, humanity
is turning into apes.
Yeah, they can't talk, they or can't communicate speak. They can't think.
So what are they gonna start doing? Sign language, you know? I'm very curious to see where that goes. So I think, you know, you're right, they did a great job at having a finality to this film and ending Caesar's, you know, path, but now we also get teased a little bit, of course, you know.
Yeah, so I would like them to see more. It's nice that, you know, in this 21st century Hollywood that's franchise, everything's a connected universe, it's insanely refreshing to get a definitive trilogy. Even the Dark Knight trilogy, even though I think The Dark Knight Rises was not a good movie, I respect Nolan for doing a conclusive, like, this was the story I'm telling and that's it. I'm not going to make any more. And they just went with it. And Apes feels very much the same thing. I think War for the Planet of the Apes is a far superior movie to The Dark Knight Rises as far as emotional conclusion to a story. But it feels very conclusive in that way, where it's like, that's a singular story well told. And I'm very, very happy that Fox was willing to let that happen, in the same way that Warner Brothers was willing to let Nolan do that story as well. And, you know, that's why I'm like, I hope they take some time and really think about, like, do we want to continue this or are we good to go? These aren't huge money makers. So, you know, War for the Planet of the Apes, they just announced that it did decent box office this weekend, but it's not like Marvel movie numbers. So it's like, is that going to justify a sequel? I don't know. But I'm very satisfied with that movie. And that's, you know, even though I didn't love it as much as I loved Dawn, I'm still happy that I felt satisfaction. I think that's a huge accomplishment in and of itself.
And I think these two, especially Dawn and War, are so thoughtful. Yeah. Like, they're everything that happens was meant to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just and very moving.
As much as I love Marvel and I love Star Wars more so than Marvel, but Marvel is starting to feel very candy-coated cookie cutter.
Yeah, I think, like, we're getting more emotional depth in these movies than we are in Marvel right now.
That's very, I'm really happy that, I'm more excited that that happened at all than, you know, it is very, I'm very happy that these movies got made. But so there we go. A week full of apes. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
It was great. Yeah. It was a good experience. Exactly. No regrets. I loved it.
So last question. How do you rank the Planet of the Apes franchise?
All right. So my number one is War.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Right. I'm going there. Two is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. Three, Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Unpopular opinion. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. then we have Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Then Planet of the Apes.
Okay. Then the Tim Burton movie, right?
Well, I don't know about that. We're skipping that one in my ranking. And then Conquest, Escape, and then my worst is Battle for.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going for.
That doesn't surprise me at all. So I would rank it, Dawn is my number one, War is number two, third is Planet of the Apes, four is Rise, five is Conquest, six is Beneath, seven is Escape, eight is Battle, and nine is Tim Burton, which honestly,
we only agree on like maybe the last.
It shouldn't even be in that ranking. And I will say this again, as much as I enjoy the original series, it does in no way does it have the emotional depth or effective storytelling as this new trilogy.
But we wouldn't have the new without the old.
It's true. So,
so
we have to give major props to that. Absolutely. I enjoy it as a product of its time, as a classic film, and as an extremely amazing, one of the great endings of all time. But I think even Rise, which I ranked lower, is a more effective emotional movie-going experience overall than the original Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
But there you go. Those are our rankings. Yeah. What are your rankings of Planet of the Apes? Did you see War for the Planet of the Apes? How did you think? How does it rank? Did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it? Does it hold up to Dawn? So everything. Talk to us. I'm at @YeShondorman on Twitter. And talk to Sarah. How do you like Beneath the Planet of the Apes more than Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, come tweet at me.
Is there anybody else out there who feels the same way?
I'm with Love Alone on Twitter.
So we, and that is that. So we, and also, yeah, again, I would encourage you, if you're listening to this, give us a 5-star rating wherever you might be listening. If you have a rating system, it'll give us a little boost. You can also listen to all the other great Nerd Party shows at thenerdparty.com. They're wonderful. I know Nerd Nuptial and Tristan and the Girl are going to be giving a rating and review of War for the Planet of the Apes if it's not up already. So be sure to check that out when it comes out. And stay tuned to the Nerd Party for all your wonderful nerd news, and follow us at Join Nerd Party on Twitter. But Sarah, I'm so thrilled we got to do this. So thank you so much for sitting down with me. And
thank you.
And sitting through all those apes. And we hope you all have a wonderful day, evening, whatever. Go see this movie. It's fantastic.